Have you ever heard the name Bobby Jack Fowler? Well, I have a vague recollection of hearing about him 15 years ago or so when he died in prison up in Salem. And I believe that he was suspected of at least 20 murders around Oregon, some in Texas, some in Florida, and some in Canada, just to name a few. But he was only ever convicted of one case that involved a murder. And what finally sent him to prison was his victim escaped. And we're going to talk about all of his crimes, and we're going to talk about his victims and his life of crime, which spanned from 1969 up until 1995 when he was finally caught. This guy is a little bit lesser known when it comes to the serial killer world, but that doesn't make him any less of a monster. I'm in my basement. I've done some reading, done some writing, done some research, and I think I'm pretty well prepared to bring you another episode of Death Mysteries. Welcome back to Death Mysteries Season 2. Before we get started with Bobby Jack Fowler, I want to tell you about a couple of cases, just real briefly, that have happened in my area over the last couple of months. The first happened back in December of 2020. A man named Kurt Krause was shot to death in the North Valley Industrial Park section of Merlin, Oregon, which I'm pretty familiar with Merlin. It's where the dump is. It's north of Grants Pass, right off of I-5. It's a small community. There's some churches there, a few restaurants, a few pot shops, that kind of thing. But it's basically just a strip of highway. You can't actually take that way out to Gold Beach. It's 84 miles long and takes a lot longer than you think it will. Anyway, Kurt Krause was shot to death, and there were no witnesses. And they don't have any suspects or surveillance photos or anything. His family's actually offering a $50,000 reward leading to the arrest and conviction of parties responsible for his murder. It's said that some people heard some gunshots in the area, but nobody witnessed the crime. And if anybody has any information about this crime, you can contact the OSP or Pacific Consulting and Investigation, which is a private investigation firm hired by the family, at 541-441-2209. This case is going on, you know, over five months, and there's still no suspects. Somebody wanted this guy dead and made it happen. It's a shame. But if I hear anything about this, I'll bring it to you an update. But yeah, the unsolved murder of Kurt Krause in Merlin, Oregon. Another pretty crazy murder story from the Grants Pass area that occurred just a couple of weeks ago on March 24th. Has to do with two men who were found burned up in a car out on a logging road. And it seems that the suspect in the killings actually had a run-in with the police while they were responding to this burning car and tried to run over a couple of officers on this logging road, and the officers opened fire on him, hitting his car but not hitting him. He was able to make an escape. And when they finally made their way to the car, which was about 7 miles out, a logging road near Lake Selmac in Josephine County, they found the bodies of Daniel T. Hill, age 24, and Paul M. Falk, age 26, shot to death and inside the burning burning car. And so after some investigation, they developed information indicating that a Harley Boyts was the likely suspect. He was later apprehended about a week after that in Portland, Oregon. And Harley Boyts has been charged with murder, arson, abuse of a corpse, felon in possession of a firearm, and unauthorized use of a motor vehicle, which is basically car theft. And I did some investigation into this, and I went to Harley Boyts' Facebook page, and not going to say anything bad about him, but it seems that the story is that, from what I can surmise, that Harley Boyts had a baby with a woman, who I'm not going to name, and while she was caring for the child very young, he went off to prison back in 2015, 2016. And while he was in prison, she hooked up with one of their other friends. And I think all these people went to high school together. This other friend would have been Paul Folk, one of the victims. From what I can surmise, Harley would have been jealous of Paul raising his child and murdered Paul along with Daniel in the car and set them on fire. So I'm thinking jealousy is probably the motive. And I've creeped around these people's Facebook pages a little bit. I don't know any of them. And tried to figure out exactly what happened. But it seems as if this is a love triangle at the very least. Or, you know, it could possibly be something completely unrelated to that. They could all be cool with, you know, people dating other people. Not really sure, but, you know, I'm just trying to draw some conclusions. Love will make you do some crazy ass shit and is often a motive for murder, second only to money. So anyway, all right, we're going to get on to our main event here. The lesser known serial killer, Bobby Jack Fowler. On June 12, 1939, in Galveston, Texas, Bobby Jack Fowler was born. And apparently his name was Bobby Jack Fowler. It wasn't Robert James Fowler or Robert Jack Fowler. It was Bobby Jack. And how Texas is that? So he's born 1939, right before World War II. And I couldn't really find a whole lot about his early life, and I did a lot of looking. He's not one of those people where you have an extensive history of his childhood to look into and to, you know, kind of data mine for reasons why he may have gone so wrong and strayed off the path and become a serial killer. It appears that he traveled around the country a lot. Starting in the 1970s and ending in the 1990s, the places where he quote unquote lived or ended up would have been Florida, British Columbia, Iowa, Louisiana, Texas, Oregon, South Carolina, Arizona, Tennessee, and Washington State. And we know that he has suspected victims in British Columbia, in Texas, in Oregon, in Washington State, Tennessee. He served some time there. I couldn't find a whole lot about Iowa, Louisiana, South Carolina, Arizona, or Florida, but it's likely he has victims in all these states. One thing's for sure, he has a criminal record from every single fucking place that he lived. And his criminal record ranged from thefts and drugs all the way up into, you know, rape and attempted murder. So this is a pretty bad dude. In 1969, Fowler would have been 30 years old, and he was actually charged with a double murder in Texas. He apparently, allegedly, shot a man and a woman to death, but was only convicted of discharging a weapon within the city limits and was basically let off without much of a punishment. Immediately in 1969, He decides to skip out of Texas, probably having narrowly avoided the death penalty, and he travels up to British Columbia. Right about this time, we have some disappearances starting in the famous Highway of Tears set of murders, which I'm going to go into a little bit here. Bobby Jack Fowler is suspected in some of the Highway of Tears murders, but not all of them. In fact, authorities think there was at least two or three serial killers responsible for these 40 to 50 murders spanning from the 1970s all the way into the early 2000s. We do know that Bobby Jack Fowler could not have been responsible for any of the Highway of Tears murders committed after 1995, and the reason for that will be explained in this podcast, so hold on. I couldn't find any arrest or anything for Bobby Jack Fowler from 1969. In British Columbia, but we do know that he was working for a company called Happy's Roofing Company, which traveled up and down Highway 16, and that is the Highway of Tears. And we do know that he was in the area until at least 1975. In 1974, Colleen McMillan was hitchhiking along Highway 16 and disappeared, only to turn up a few months later dead. Some DNA trace evidence was collected from her body. Mind you, this was 1974, so they didn't know they were collecting DNA evidence, but out of all the things that were collected, they were saved and able to be tested later on. And in 2012, Bobby Jack Fowler's DNA was actually matched to samples taken from Colleen McMillan's body back in 1974. So if evidence is stored properly, DNA can be extracted and actually compared many decades later. What we run into as a problem all too often in the investigation side of things is evidence that isn't properly handled or collected, and DNA is unusable, especially after decades. Then we have another case from 1973 where Gail Ways and Pamela Darlington both disappeared while hitchhiking, and there's some really strong circumstantial evidence that points towards Bobby Jack Fowler in the deaths of those two ladies. There are over 40 missing and murdered women from the Highway of Tears murder series. Oh, God, I shouldn't call it a series. From the case, I guess we'll call it that. And the RCMP, which is the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, they believe that the murders committed from at least 1989 through 2006 could not have been done by Bobby Jack Fowler, but rather by at least one other person. Many of the victims in the Highway of Tears case are Native women who were hitchhiking and came from a lower socioeconomic class. And I know from, watching a documentary and from listening to some other podcasts and news stories about the Highway of Tears, their murders were not investigated with too much zeal. And a lot of people think that it was not a priority for the local police and the RCMP, especially back in the 70s and 80s, and that the heat really only turned up on this in the mid-2000, 2010, 2012. In that time frame, it really started getting more attention, mainly because they woke up and said, hey, we've got probably 40-plus women here that have been murdered, and we don't have any convictions. And part of that heat being turned up led to Bobby Jack Fowler's DNA being conclusively linked to Colleen McMillan's disappearance and murder. For more information about the Highway of Tears, I recommend the 2015 documentary by the same title, Highway of Tears. And there's also an excellent Crime Junkies podcast episode about the Highway of Tears, and a lot of other podcasts have covered it extensively. So I just wanted to bring in Bobby Jack Fowler's connection to these cases, but we're not going to talk about that very much longer. In fact, not at all. In 1976 in Tennessee, so we know that he was in British Columbia until 1975. Well, he pops up again in 1976 in Tennessee, where he is arrested for rape. And he's actually convicted and sentenced to 5 years in prison, but is out in only 2 years. Wow. So the victim was somebody that he picked up in a bar, and he bound her with rope and then beat and strangled her. And he actually whipped her severely using her own belt. And then he put her on the side of a road and covered her up with brush. We're going to see this same MO again a little bit later on in our story. So I'll just repeat that again. He beats her, he strangles her, and he rapes her, and then he leaves her on the side of a road in a remote area and covers her up with a pile of brush. This is this guy's MO. Luckily, this victim survived and was able to get help and identify Bobby Jack Fowler as her attacker, and this led to his conviction. But had she died, maybe he would have gotten away with this one too. Now we're going to talk about what happened in the state I live in, Oregon. In 1992, Bobby Jack Fowler was in and around the Newport area, which is in Lincoln County. And he's actually suspected of some murders in Tillamook County also. So in Lincoln County, there's a town called Newport. Gosh, I think I already said that. And there's some beautiful beaches. It's along the Pacific Ocean. It draws lots of tourists. And it's in the kind of the northwestern part of the state, closer to Portland than it is to us. I've actually never been to Newport, but I think I'll make a trip up there pretty soon, maybe this summer. I haven't seen the ocean in quite a while, you know? So on May 3rd of 1992, a 19-year-old woman named Sheila Swanson and 17-year-old Melissa Sanders disappear. Now, I actually got some conflicting reports about their age. I got another news article that actually says that Sheila and Melissa were both 16, not 17 and 19. I don't think this matters that much, but at least one was still a child. And I'm just going to go ahead and actually say that they're probably both 16, and because I've actually seen a couple of reports of them being 16 and only one of them being 17 and 19. So they were staying at the Beverly Beach State Park, which is about 5 miles north of Newport, Oregon. And they were actually there with Melissa's family. And they had their own tent, and they were hanging out on the beach. The whole family was there for a week. You know, I can remember doing stuff like this when I was a kid, where we'd go camping with somebody's family or with my family, and we'd get to bring a friend along, and we'd have our own tent, and we'd hang out together, and we'd do stuff with the family, but then we'd go off and do stuff, have adventures, you know. How cool was that as a teenager to have one of your friends come along with you on a family vacation or a family outing and be able to, you know, really share in that, you know, awesome familyness, but also share it with one of your really close friends that you feel like is family. It's too bad that this ended in tragedy. So they were at this campground called Beverly Beach State Park Campground, and they went over to use a payphone about 1 o'clock in the morning on May 3rd. Sometime after 1 a.m., they disappeared without a trace. Nobody in the family saw them, and no other witnesses saw them. And it appears that 5 months later, Melissa and Sheila's remains were found by hunters who were looking for deer to hunt near Eddyville. And Eddyville is a small unincorporated community of about 500 people. It's located 27 miles from the Beverly Beach State Park, and it takes about 40 minutes to get there by car. So it's not that far away, but it's not in the same vicinity. It's not really super close to where they went missing. And it appears that their bodies were taken to a remote logging road, and they were covered in brush. And even though their cause of death could not be determined by the medical examiner, because again, it had been 5 months and they were pretty, pretty decomposed. This matches Bobby Jack Fowler's MO, and the fact that there wasn't any trauma or gunshots or other things that would have been visible after 5 months, it leads me to believe that strangulation is a very plausible option. So strangling two young girls, and then putting them underneath brush, this fits Bobby Jack Fowler's MO to a T, right? A couple years later, also in the Newport area, we had Jennifer Essen, who was 15, and Kara Leas, who was 16, disappearing from Newport on January 28th. And so these two young ladies were actually at a friend's house watching movies, and they were going to get a ride home from Jennifer's older brother. But for some reason, they called him about 1 a.m. and said, hey, they would rather walk home. Now, on January 28th of 1995, I would have been in high school. I don't remember what was going on that year, but I'm pretty sure in that January, it rained for a month straight where I was living in California. And so if the weather was anything like it was where I lived up here, then it was probably pretty cold and rainy. And Oregon's known for being cold and rainy to begin with. But let's just say walking home might not have been the best choice. And it kind of befuddles me why these two young ladies would walk home in the middle of January in northern Oregon, raining or not. It would have been damn cold. I would have taken I wish they'd gotten a ride home with Jennifer's older brother. Maybe then they would still be alive. But hindsight, right? So these two young ladies go missing on January 28th, and on February 10th, a couple of loggers are out, and they're driving down a logging road, and for whatever reason, they pull over, and they discover the bodies of Jennifer and Kara underneath some brush near the logging road, and they had been raped and strangled. So this also sounds like Bobby Jack Fowler, and he was living in the Newport area at the time. So these two cases where these four young ladies are, abducted and strangled and sexually assaulted, are actually covered in an episode of Dark Minds, which is available to watch. And it's one of those, kind of like Forensic Files like shows. And these still remain, quote unquote, unsolved, but the investigators in the area think that Bobby Jack Fowler is a very strong person of interest slash subject. But yeah, he was never arrested or charged in these crimes. There's actually another case from the area from 10 years beforehand. In 1984, a girl named Kelly Disney was walking along Highway 20 just east of Newport, and I believe it was March 9th, 1984, and she disappeared without a trace. And there was some conjecture whether or not Bobby Jack Fowler was in the area back 10 years before that in 1984, and could he be responsible for Kelly Disney's disappearance? Investigators seem to think that this is unrelated. Her body was never found, so she is still missing to this day. And could she be a runaway? Could she be murdered by somebody else? Could it even be Bobby Jack Fowler who's responsible, even though he wasn't in the area at the time? These are mysteries. All right, so now we're going to get to the good part. On June 28th, 1995, Bobby Jack Fowler is hanging out at a bar, and he picks up a woman who we don't actually have her name, but even if we did, we wouldn't name her, and he brings her back to his hotel room at the Tides Inn in Newport, And I remember we had a Taizen back in Bodega Bay where I grew up, and it was a kind of fancy restaurant and had some fancy cabins and a nice little hotel, the Inn at the Tides. And this was in Bodega Bay right on the Pacific Coast. So if the Taizen was anything like our Taizen, it probably would have been out of Bobby Jack Fowler's league and he wouldn't have been able to rent there. But since this guy was kind of a low rent, criminal dirtbag piece of shit, the Taizen in Newport is probably affordable. Let's just put it that way. And it probably doesn't have a fancy restaurant attached either. So he picks this lady up at a bar. He brings her back to his room at the Taizen. And the details are kind of sketchy, but we do know that he assaults her. He ties her up and beats her. And he tries to rape her, but I couldn't find an exact account from this witness as to how she managed to do this, but she manages to fight him off while he's trying to rape her, and she jumps out of the second story window and lands on the ground with a rope still tied around her right leg, and she starts to run and scream at the top of her lungs. Now, that takes some serious, serious guts to be able to jump out of a second-story window. Well, guts and fear. Fear for your life, some adrenaline, that kind of thing. So this lady gets away, and she gets attention from some other guests at the hotel, and she's able to go to the police, and this leads to Bobby Jack Fowler's downfall. So this woman who was able to escape Bobby Jack Fowler's grasp is able to go to court. She's able to testify against this piece of crap and tell the jury exactly what happened, how Bobby Jack Fowler kidnapped her, you know, beat, attempted to rape her, terrorized her, basically, you know, was probably going to kill her. And so she's able to testify against him. She's able to send him to prison. The judge ends up giving him a 16-year sentence for this crime. And mind you, he's not a convicted murderer at this point. He was charged with murder in Texas in 1969. That didn't stick. He's able to have killed women in Canada, allegedly, and in Oregon, allegedly, and probably in, you know, Florida and maybe Washington State. There's actually a list of other crimes that people on web sleuths and other internet forums think that he might be good for. And a lot of cops are looking into cold cases where this guy, Bobby Jack Fowler, may have been at the time. And the Canadian connection is probably the strongest. I mean, he might have killed 10 plus women up there, according to the RCMP. So he's not a convicted murderer, but he ends up getting sentenced to 16 years in prison for this rape and kidnapping. And he's actually eligible for parole. They say, you know, 16 years with parole possible in 10 years. Well, he doesn't end up getting out of prison. In 2006, Bobby Jack Fowler is diagnosed with lung cancer. And, you know, I've talked about this before where sometimes a criminal will get really good medical care, you know, kidney dialysis, that kind of stuff, and they'll stay alive for, you know, months, sometimes years, maybe even decades, receiving really good medical care. And, you know, basically even on death row, sometimes we'll keep them alive artificially for a very long time. Well, that's not the case with Bobby Joe. On May 5th, or Bobby Joe, Bobby Jack, on May 15th, 2006, Bobby Jack Fowler dies of lung cancer in the state prison in Salem, Oregon. And I can say, yeah, right on. Good riddance. I'm glad we don't have to pay for him to be alive anymore. You know, I kind of thought maybe it would be a good thing if he was still alive and we could connect him via DNA to some other cases and bring him to justice and put him on the hot seat so that families of his victims could actually get a little bit of, you know, relief or justice for the murder victims that he is suspected in taking their lives. But yeah, that's impossible now. He's dead and cremated. He wasn't buried. I almost think it'd be better if he was buried in like a pauper's grave behind the cemetery or something. Cremation almost seems too good for him. Maybe they should have, put his body underneath some brush on the side of a logging road somewhere. Yeah, maybe that would have been good enough for him. What a piece of shit. Anyway, I've got a couple of questions about Bobby Jack Fowler. How many murders could he have committed? We know of about six, the two in Texas, and four in Oregon, and the one in Canada that he was linked to via DNA. And it's estimated he could have killed upwards of 40 women. So yeah, maybe 7 to 40 women is how many he probably killed. Did meth and alcohol drive him crazy and make him kill? I've talked about this before on my podcast. I think meth changes people's brain function in such a way that they become sex maniacs and violent, and it really changes people into monsters. And he was a well-known methamphetamine abuser, and he used a lot of alcohol. And meth users, a lot of times, they have to drink alcohol in combination with meth to kind of mellow out the meth. And then it's a vicious cycle where they take more meth because they're drunk, and then they get drunk to kind of chill out the meth, and so they're on both of them. What was his childhood like? You know, I couldn't really find any information about this. He's not a famous Jerry Brutos or Ted Bundy or one of those people where we have a lot of information about their childhood. And does he have any criminal relatives? You know, like an uncle, a brother, a cousin, a dad who also spent time in prison? Because we see that a lot with these hyper-violent people. I don't know. Couldn't find any information about his family tree. I'm left wondering what kind of lives could his victims have lived had they not been murdered by this piece of shit. These young girls were killed in their, late teenage years. I'm sure they were all very beautiful and bubbly and I don't know how to describe them, but I'm sure that they were awesome people and had their whole lives ahead of them and, really deserved a chance to contribute to society and have fun and finish up their teenage years and go to college. And all that was robbed from them by this one meth head piece of shit. Was his death by lung cancer in state prison painful enough? I kind of wrestle with that one. Was he punished enough? Was a couple of years in prison here and there good enough? Did society extract their pound of flesh for his crimes? I would say no. I would say he got off a little bit too easy for the rapes and for the beatings and for the previous convictions. Yeah, he was able to skirt by all the way until 1995 when one of his victims was strong enough and lucky enough to get away from him and finally get him put in jail. And, it's conceivable, had he not got lung cancer, he might have gotten out in 16 years, which he would have been, 72 years old or so at 16 years from his conviction. 72 is not too young or not too old to commit more murders. I mean, he wouldn't have been in the prime of life anymore. He wouldn't have been as strong, but he still would have been dangerous. We've seen a number of serial killers like Joseph DeAngelo, the Golden State Killer, who even in his later years, I think he's faking it when you see him in court kind of drooling in a wheelchair. I think some of these old serial killers can be damn dangerous. And I don't really want them out there at any age, but he could have been paroled had the DNA not come back and linked him to this Canadian case. And maybe they would have extradited him to Canada so he'd gone to prison there. I mean, these are all what ifs, but this guy was a royal piece of shit, killed some really beautiful people. I'm glad he's dead now and that we don't have to pay for him with our tax dollars. And let's really hope that DNA can clear some of these other cases and either, you know, exclude this Bobby Jack Fowler guy or possibly include him and clear some of these cases so we're not chasing our tails. Remember I said there's limited resources when it comes to solving cases. And if DNA can provide some answers and law enforcement can go out there and put their resources onto other cases and, you know, kind of thin the herd and, you know, clear cases, get them off the desk and provide some, you know, closure to the closure. I shouldn't use that word. You know, provide some answers to the family. That's a good word for it. Of some of these victims who we don't know what happened to them or we don't know who their murderer is, then that'll be a really good thing. I think that's about it for this episode of Death Mysteries. Really, really thankful that you guys hung in there and listened to my Bobby Jack Fowler episode. I'm still looking for a co-host, and this is a hard show to put together by myself. I really wish I had somebody to talk to, and we could do this via Skype or over the internet. It's like, ooh, yeah, well, I guess it's almost 3 o'clock in the morning, so a lot of people aren't up like me doing the graveyard shift thing, but I should say I love doing the graveyard shift. I love being up all night long. Nighttime is my jam, right? Anyway, keep your head on a swivel. Situational awareness is key. Stay out of stupid situations, don't hitchhike, and don't become a death mystery.